indicate wind direction. She was sitting on the porch, rocking, snapping beans, a tall, handsome woman. I stepped out of the rental car. Napoleon jumped onto the ground, sniffed the curb, then tore up the sidewalk, flew up the stairs and jumped into her lap, spilling beans across the porch. She laughed, hugged him while he licked her face, and said, "Tank, where on earth have you been?" Tank. So that's his name. I climbed the steps. "Ma'am, my name's Ben Payne. I'm a doctor from Jacksonville. I was with your husband when his plane crashed." She shook her head. Her eyes narrowed. "He didn't crash that plane. He was too good a pilot." "Yes, ma'am. He had a heart attack. Landed the plane up in the mountains. Saved our lives." I opened a box and set it next to her. In it were his watch, his wallet, his pipe, and the lighter she'd given him. She touched each item, the lighter last. She held it in her lap. Her lip trembled and tears dripped off her face. We talked for several hours. I told her everything I could remember, even where I'd buried him and what the view was like. She liked that. Said he would have too. She opened their album, or albums, and told me their story. It was filled with tenderness. Hearing it hurt. Several hours later, I stood to leave. What else could I say? I fumbled with the car keys. "Ma'am, I want to..." She shook her head. Tank perched on her lap. She inched forward on the rocker. Tank hopped off, and she stood slowly. A bad left hip. She stood at an angle and straightened. She gave me her hand. I eyed her leg. "If and when you need a hip replacement, call me. I'll come out here and do it for nothing." She smiled. I knelt. "Tank, you're the best. I'll miss you." He slobbered my face, then ran down into his yard and began peeing on every tree he could find. "I know, you'll miss me too." I gave her my card for if and when she ever needed me. I was unsure how to leave. Do I hug her? Shake her hand? I mean, what's protocol for saying goodbye to the wife of the pilot who died saving your life? Not to mention that if I hadn't hired him to charter me to Denver, he'd have been home with her when he died. And I imagine she thought of that too. "Young man?" "Yes, ma'am." "Thank you." I scratched my head. "Ma'am, I'm..." She shook her head. "I'm not."
"You're not?"
Her eyes shone a clear, bright blue. "Grover didn't just fly anybody in that plane. He was picky. Purposeful. Turned away more clients than he accepted. If he took you flying, he had a reason. It was his gift to you."
"Yes, ma'am."
She leaned on me, hugged me and squeezed my arms with her hands. Her skin was thin, hung off her, and her hair was a fine, snowy white. She shook as she hugged me. I kissed her on the cheek, soft with fuzz, and drove away. I glanced in the rearview mirror. She was standing on the porch, staring out across the mountain. Napoleon stood on the top step, chest out, barking at the wind. Chapter 48. Vince was sitting with her when I walked into the room. He stood, a warm smile, warm handshake, even a stiff hug.
"Ashley's telling me what you did." He shook his head. "I can't thank you enough."
"Remember," I patted her foot, "I'm the one who invited her onto the plane. You might ought to consider pressing charges." He laughed. I liked him. She'd chosen well. They'd be happy.
He'd marry above himself, as would any man who married Ashley. She was one in a million. Color had returned to her face. Three empty coffee cups sat on the bedside table. The bladder bag hanging off the side of her bed was nearly full, and the color was good. Her new cell phone was ringing off the hook. Media crews had called. Everybody wanted the exclusive. She asked, "What are you going to tell them?"
"Nothing. I'm ducking out the back door, going home."
I looked at the clock on the wall. "Leave in 90 minutes. Just came to say goodbye." Her expression changed.
"Don't worry, you two have plenty to talk about. A wedding to plan. I'm sure we'll be in touch."
I walked to the opposite side of the bed. She crossed her arms. "You called your wife yet?"
"No," I shook my head. "I'm going to see her as soon as I get home."
She nodded. "I hope it works out, Ben."
I nodded.
She squeezed my hand. I kissed her forehead and turned to go. She held on and smiled. "Ben?"
I spoke without turning.
"Yes?" Vince patted her on the shoulder.
"Be right back. I'm going to go get some coffee."
He put his hand on my shoulder.
"Thank you. For everything."
He walked out. She was still holding onto my hand. I sat on the edge of the bed. Something was tugging at my insides. It most closely resembled an ache. I tried to smile.
"Can I ask you something?" she said.
"You've earned the right to ask me anything."
"Would you ever hit on a married or almost married woman?"
"I've only hit on one woman in my life."
She smiled.
"Just checking. Can I ask you something else?"
"Yes."
"Why'd you ask me to get on the plane with you?"
I stared out the window, thinking back. "Seems like a long time ago, doesn't it?"
"It does. Then sometimes it feels like yesterday."
Our wedding was one of the happier days either of us ever knew. On our own. It was a launching out, a beginning. We were free to love each other without interference. I think when two people really love each other, I mean, my voice cracked, way down deep, like where their souls sleep and dreams happen, where pain can't live because there's nothing for it to feed on. Then a wedding is a bleeding together of those two souls, like two rivers running together, all that water becoming the same water. Mine did that.
When I met you, I saw in your face the hope that yours might be that too. I guess meeting you was a reminder that I knew a precious, tender love at one time. And I think, if I'm honest, I wanted to brush up alongside that. To touch it. Come face to face with it. In doing so, I thought maybe I could remember, because I don't want to forget.
She reached up and thumbed the tear off my face.
I think that's why I invited you on the plane. And for that selfishness, I am both eternally sorry and eternally grateful. Those 28 days in the mountains with you reminded me that love is worth doing, no matter how much it hurts. I stood, kissed her on the lips, and walked out.
Chapter 49. The plane landed in Jacksonville just after 2 p.m. Media crews were waiting. My picture had circulated. So had the story. Problem was, they were looking for a guy 30 pounds heavier. I had no bag, so I skirted the frenzy and walked to my car, which after more than a month and a half was still sitting there, covered in yellow pollen. The lady at the ticket booth told me, with little or no facial expression,
$387.
I had a feeling that arguing with her would have little effect. I handed her my American Express, grateful for the chance to pay my bill and go home. The change in my environment was strange. Most striking were the things I was not doing. Not pulling a sled, not staring out across snow, not starting a fire with a bow drill, not skinning a rabbit or moose, not dependent upon shooting an arrow to eat, not wiggling my toes or blowing on my fingers to keep them warm, not listening for the sound of Ashley's voice, not hearing the sound of Ashley's voice. I drove south down I-95. Funny, I found myself driving slowly. Everybody was passing me. I crossed the Fuller Warren Bridge and passed the hospital where I live most of my life. My partners had all called, ecstatic to hear my voice. I'd check in with them in the days ahead. There was plenty of time to tell the story. I turned south down Hendricks Avenue, drove through San Marco, then merged onto San Jose Boulevard and stopped at Trad's, a garden store and flower shop. I walked into the greenhouse and was greeted by two things. The first was the smell of manure. The second was Tatiana, an attractive Russian lady in her 50s, with filthy hands and beautiful cheek lines. She shouted at me across the tops of the plumeria. There are a dozen flower shops in town, but Tatiana's accent is one in a million. Reminds me of everything James Bond and Rocky IV. Her voice is deep, guttural, scarred by either years of torture or years of alcohol or both. All the W's are turned into V's. All the E's are long, and she double trills all her R's. Vodka sounds like vodka. I don't even like this stuff. But when the word rolls off her lips, I'm ready for a Grey Goose or absolute something. She was probably a spy in her former life. Might still be. She pushed her denim forearm across her sweaty forehead.
And just where have you been?
The word been echoed off the glass. The truth would take too long. Vacation. Whenever she walked, it looked like she was marching, brisk, stiff, and in a hurry. She fast-footed it around the corner, holding a purple orchid with a white stripe down the middle. The purple was deep, almost black in the middle, and the stem must have been 4 feet tall and had 30 blooms with 30 more on the way.
I have just the thing, been saving it for you. Three people tried to buy just today, but I say, no, you cannot have. My boss, he think me crazy, threatened to fire me. But I say it's yours. You will be back, and you will want this.
Rachel would love it. It's remarkable, thank you. I'll give it to her today, in just a few minutes. She walked me to the cash register, looked both ways for the owner, then waved her finger in the air like a windshield wiper and said,
we have sale last week. No sale this week. But for you, sale goes on this week.
Thank you, Tatiana. I held up the orchid.
And thank you for this.
Traffic was thick, stopping me at every light. Waiting for green, I looked right. Beyond the dry cleaners sat Watson Martial Arts. The front wall was mostly glass. Inside, a class of white-uniformed people with various colored belts were kicking and punching. I'd driven by it hundreds of times, yet never noticed it. Until now. The light turned green, and I accelerated. I drove south on I-95, east on J. Turner Butler Boulevard, then south on A1A. I stopped at the liquor store and bought a bottle of wine. I drove past Mickler's Landing, past my condo at South Pontevedra, then to Rachel's house. I'd fenced the property with a tall, wrought-iron fence. I grabbed the orchid out of the passenger seat, walked beneath the towering live oak and up the stone steps, dug in the rocks for the hide key, and unlocked the door. I had planted Confederate jasmine on both sides of the doorframe. It had grown up and filled in above the door. A few thicker vines hung down. I lifted the vines, pulled on the squeaking door, and stepped inside. To help it stay cool in the summer, I put in a marble floor. My steps echoed. I talked to Rachel through the night. I poured the wine, pressed play on the recorder, and stared out through the glass, listening to the sound of my voice and watching the waves crawl up and down the beach. I think parts were hard for her to hear, but she heard every word. I gave her the orchid, placing it on a shelf along the glass where it would draw the morning sun. It'd be happy there. Once the blooms fell, I'd put it up in the solarium with the 250 others. It was 4 in the morning when my last recording finished. I was tired and had drifted off. The silence woke me. Funny how that works. I was rising to leave when I noticed the recorder. The faceplate was flashing blue. One file remained unplayed. The recorder was electronic. I always recorded in the same file. I might have 50 recordings, but all under the same file number. For the first time, I noticed a third file number, one I'd not created. I pushed play. A faint whisper appeared. There was a lot of wind in the background, a dog whining. I turned up the volume. Rachel? It's Ashley. We were caught in an avalanche, and Ben went for help. He's running now. I don't know if I'll make it. I'm really cold. There was a silence. I wanted to tell you. Actually, I wanted to thank you. I know I'm a little chatty, but I've got to talk or I'll go to sleep. If I do, I'm not sure I can wake up again. I write a column for the paper. Talk a lot about love, relationships, which is ironic because I've had my share of bad ones. Hence, I'm a bit of a skeptic. I'm headed home to marry a man who is well off, good-looking, gives me nice things. But after 28 days with your husband in this cold, white-capped world, I'm left wondering if that's enough. I'm left wondering, what about love? Is it possible? Can I have it? I once thought all the good ones were gone. The guys, that is. Now I wonder, are there other Bens out there? I've been hurt. I imagine we all have. And I think somewhere in that pain we convince ourselves that if we don't open up and love again, we don't have to hurt again. Take the Mercedes and the 2-carat ring, the house in Buckhead, and call it a day. Just give him what he wants, when he wants it, and everybody's happy. Right? I have thought that a long time. But this place out here is quiet. The silence has a ring to it. Even the snow makes a sound if you listen close enough. Somewhere a few days back, maybe when I first met him on the plane, I was attracted to this man I now know as Ben Payne. Sure, he's good looking. But what attracted me was something else. Something I wanted to touch or be touched by. Something tender and warm and whole. I don't know what to call it, but I know it when I hear it, and I hear it when he speaks to you in this recorder. I've listened many nights when he thought I was sleeping, but I stayed up just to hear his tone of voice and how he talked to you and with you. I've never had anyone talk to me like that. My fiancé doesn't. Sure, he's kind. But in Ben, there's this palpable thing that is rich, and I just want to sink my hands into it, bathe and paint myself in it. I know I'm talking about your husband, so you need to know that in all the time we've been here, he has treated me like a gentleman, truly. At first my feelings were hurt, but then I saw that it had to do with this thing I'm talking about, with you. And it's deep-wired into his DNA, like you'd have to kill him to get it out. I've never seen anything like it. It's the truest thing I've ever sensed. Movies don't depict it. Books don't narrate it. Columns can't poke fun at it. I have lain awake at night, listening to him talk to you, share his heart, apologize for what I don't know, and found myself aching and crying and wanting a man to hold me in his heart the way Ben holds you. I know I'm not telling you anything you don't already know. But he says you two are separated. I guess I'm just wanting to go on the record for him to say that he can't love you any more than he already does. I didn't even think a love like this existed. But now I've heard it, seen it, felt it, slept alongside it. And if you won't have him, then what does he do with a love like this? I've written 1,000 columns where I've laughed at love, dared anyone to show me a love like Ben's existed, because, in truth, that's why I write. To build a wall around me, protect me from the hurts I've suffered, and dare anyone to show me a true love that's worth dying for. More than that, one that's worth living for. He won't tell me the details, plays his cards close to his chest. But he said you two argued. Said he said some things. I've thought a lot about that. What? What terrible words were spoken? What could he possibly have said that caused this? What thing? What act did he commit? What did he do to lose your love? If a love like Ben's can be had, if it's real, if a heart like Ben's exists and can be offered to another, then I'm left wondering. What can't be forgiven? What can't be forgiven? Live or die. I want a love like this. The recording ended, and I rose, ready to leave, but Rachel beckoned me to stay. She had never wanted me to leave in the first place. I told her that many times I'd wanted to come back, return to her, but forgiving myself had turned out to be easier said than done. Maybe there was something different in me. Maybe something different in her. I'm not really sure, but for the first time since our argument, I lay down, my tears dripping onto her face, and slept with my wife. Chapter 50. I tightened my cummerbund, straightened my bow tie, buttoned my jacket, then unbuttoned it and walked around the back of the country club. One of Atlanta's finest and most private. Lots of stone and grand timbers. I showed the guard my invitation. He opened the gate and I walked up the winding walk. Designer lights lit the trees, giving the place a domed feel. A throng of people stood inside. Sparkly women, powerful men. Much laughter. Drinks. The rehearsal dinner party. The night before the wedding. A happy occasion. It had been 3 months. I had returned to work, put on a few pounds, told bits and pieces of the story, and deflected the attention. I had not contacted Ashley since I left the hospital. Figured it best. But it seemed strange to be so close for a month, so dependent upon one another, and then, in a second's time, end that. Cut that tie. It seemed unnatural. I fell back into a routine, still working my way through the separation. Up before the sun, a long run on the beach, breakfast with Rachel and the kids, punch the clock at work, sometimes dinner with Rachel and the kids, then home, maybe another run or filter through the sand looking for shark's teeth, putting one foot in front of the other. Ashley stood on the far side. The invitation had included a handwritten note along with a gift. The note read, "Please come. We'd love to see you. Both of you." She went on to say that her leg had mended well, and she'd been jogging, even working out at the taekwondo dojo and teaching youth classes, though she was only kicking at about 75%. The gift enclosed was a new watch, a climbing watch made by Sunto, called the Core. Her letter continued. "The guys at the store told me this is what all the climbers wear. Gives you temperature, barometric pressure, elevation, even as a compass. You've earned it. Deserve it more than any." I found myself staring at the letter. The "we" bothered me. I stood staring from a distance. Her posture said her confidence had returned and that the pain was gone. She was beautiful. And for the first time in a long time, I felt okay thinking that. Vince stood alongside, seemed happy, He looked like a stand-up guy. In the wilderness, I'd conjured my own idea of what he'd look like, how he held himself. I was off by a good bit. She'd make it. He got a good one in her. Were it not for her, Vince and I could have been friends. I stood in the shadows, just outside, staring in the windows. I glanced at my new watch. I was late. Nervous, I turned the plastic package in my hands. I'd bought two new recorders. One for her, one for me. The latest technology, these contained a digital card with twice as much memory and battery life. At one time, that was appealing. Now, not so much. I removed them from the plastic packaging, inserted the batteries into one, and clicked it on. Hey, it's me, Ben. I received your invitation. Thanks for thinking about me. Including me. Us. I know you've been busy. It's good to see you on your feet. Looks like the leg healed well. I'm glad. There are a lot of people here. All here to celebrate with you. Just so you know, I kept my promise. I went to see Rachel. Took her an orchid, number 258, and a bottle of wine. I told her about the trip. Talked long into the night. I played her the tape. The whole thing. I slept with her. It had been a long time. It was also the last time. I had to let her go. She's not coming back. The distance is too great. The mountain between us is the one mountain I cannot climb. I thought you should know. I've spent a lot of time lately trying to figure out how to start over. The single life is different than I thought. Been taking a few notes off this website called Flying Solo. Ironic, don't you think? But it's tough. Rachel was my first love, my only love. I've never dated anyone else. Never been with anyone else. I never told you this because it just felt wrong, but even at your worst, no makeup, broken leg, sitting over a Nalgene bottle, stitches lining your face. Well, being lost with you is better than being found and alone. I wanted to thank you for that. If Vince doesn't tell you that, doesn't put you on a pedestal, he should. If he forgets, call me and I'll remind him. I am an expert on what a husband should have said. After Rachel, I didn't know what to do, how to live. So I gathered all the broken pieces of me, shoved them into a bag and hefted it over my shoulder like a bag of rocks. Years passed, dragging myself around in a bag behind me, buckled into my harness and leaning into the weight of the sled, the history of me slicing into my shoulders. Then I went to this conference, found myself in Salt Lake, and for reasons I don't understand, you sat down. I heard the sound of your voice, and something emptied the bag, scattering the pieces of me. And there, laid bare and broken, I wondered, even hoped, that there might be an ending to the story of my life that I had not told. One not etched in pain, recorded in regret, echoing through eternity. But here, hidden in the trees, I am torn. The pieces of me no longer fit together. I am reminded of all the king's horses and all the king's men. I cannot put me back together. Funny, I've loved two women in my life, and now I can't have either. Wonder what that says about me. I wanted to give you a gift, but what could I give you that would equal what you have given me? Ashley, for that alone, I wish you every happiness. I stared around the dogwood tree and through the glass. She was laughing. A single diamond hanging around her neck. A wedding gift from Vince. She looked good in diamonds. She looked good in anything. I left the recorder running, recording, emptied my pockets of my last two spare batteries, wrapped a rubber band around them, put all that in the box, closed the lid, tied the bow, left no card, slipped through the back doors, and slid it beneath the mound of 100 other gifts. In 36 hours, they'd be on a plane for 2 weeks in Italy. She'd find my gift upon their return. I walked out through the unlit garden, started my car, and pointed the wheel south down I-75. The night was warm, and I drove home with the windows down, sweating, which was okay with me. When I got home, I changed clothes, grabbed the second of my new recorders, and walked out onto the beach, stopping at the ocean's edge. I stood there a long time, Linus and his blanket, while the waves and foam washed over my feet. I turned to the thing in my hands and wrestled with what to say, where to begin. With the sun breaking the horizon, I clicked record, took 3 steps, and threw the recorder as far as I could. It spun through the air and disappeared into the daylight, in the foam of a receding wave and an outgoing tide. Chapter 51. I woke to the sound of cats on my porch. They had returned in force, bringing friends. A beautiful black cat with white feet. I named him Socks. The second was playful, always purring in my face. Long tail, long whiskers, quick ears. Kept brushing along my leg and hopping into my lap. I named her Ashley. I took the day off, spent it at home, leaning on the railing, cupping a warm mug, staring out over the ocean, listening to the waves, talking to the cats, listening for the sound of laughter. Ashley was never far away, neither the cat nor the memory. I thought back through the wilderness and drifted off to sleep, sometime after dark. I dreamed of her sitting in a gondola with Vince somewhere beneath an afternoon sun in Venice. She was tucked up alongside him, his arm around her. They were tan, and she looked happy. I didn't like the picture. I crawled off the couch a few hours before daylight. The moon was full and hung low on the horizon, glittering on the crest of each wave, quietly casting my shadow across the beach. I laced up my shoes beneath a warm breeze. Pelicans in V formation flew silently overhead, riding the updrafts, dragging their shadows across mine. I turned into the wind, taking me south, low tide. I had the beach to myself. I ran an hour, then two, weaving along the ridgeline edge of the water. A single path of turtle tracks led from the water to the dunes. She was laying her eggs. When St. Augustine came into view, I turned around, slid my Oakleys down over my eyes, and turned for home. The sun was coming up, and the wind pressed against my back. Absent were the cold, the penetrating snow, the sight of white, the feel of snow, the taste of hunger, the weight of the sled, and, maybe most noticeable, the sound of Ashley's voice. Halfway back, I intersected the mother turtle. Exhausted from her night's work, she was big, old, cutting deep grooves in her push to the water. The first wave reached her. She submerged, rinsed herself, then floated and began skimming the surface of the water. Her shell glistened. After a few minutes, she was gone. Loggerheads can live to be nearly 200 years old. I let myself think she was the same one. I watched her disappear, witnessing both sunset and sunrise. Strange. I had not expected that. I passed the entrance to Guana River State Park, and the condo came into view. I slowed, jogged, and finally walked. My ribs had healed. I could breathe deeply. I was healthy again. The July sun had climbed, harsh and bright. The water was blue, rolling glass. A few bottlenose dolphins were trolling near shore, but there was no sign of the mother loggerhead. But there would be. In the weeks ahead, the beach would be crawling with signs. I did not hear the footsteps, only felt the hand on my shoulder. I recognized the veins, the freckles where she did not wear a watch. I turned, and Ashley stood facing me. A windbreaker, running shorts, Nikes. Her eyes were red. Wet. She looked as though she hadn't slept. She shook her head, pointed behind her toward Atlanta. I was hopeful you would show, but when you didn't, I couldn't sleep. So I started picking through our presents, opening the ones that looked interesting, anything to take my mind off. Today. She held my hand in hers, then pounded me softly in the chest with her fist. Her left hand was naked. No ring. My doctor says I should start running again.
Be a good idea?
I don't like running alone.
Me either.
She picked at the sand with the toe of her shoe. She folded her arms, squinted against the rising sun, and said, I'd like to meet Rachel. Will you introduce me?
I nodded.
Now? We turned and walked down the beach. 2 miles. The house I'd built her sat up on the dunes, framed in scrub oaks and wire grass. Since I'd returned, I'd marked 10 turtle nests along the dunes with pink surveyor's tape. Ashley eyed it. Turtle nests? I nodded. We wound up through the dune and up the walkway. The sand was soft. A lot like snow. I pulled the key from around my neck, unlocked the door, lifted the Confederate jasmine vine I had yet to trim, and opened the door. To combat the summer heat, the entire house, walls, floor, sides, everything was lined with, or made of, marble. The solarium above thrived in summer. Many of the orchids were in bloom. I led Ashley through the door. Rachel lay on my left. Michael and Hannah on my right. Ashley put her hands to her mouth. I waved my hand. Ashley, meet Rachel. Rachel, meet Ashley. Ashley knelt, brushing the marble with her fingertips. She ran her fingers through the grooves of Rachel's name and the dates. On top of the marble lid, about where Rachel's hands would have been folded atop her chest, sat 7 digital recorders, all covered in dust. All but one. The one I'd carried in the mountains. Ashley touched it, turned it in her hand, and then returned it to its place among the others. On top, about where Rachel's face would be, lay my jacket, rolled up like a pillow. I sat down, my back against Rachel, my feet resting against the twins. I stared up through the blooms and the glass above. Rachel was pregnant with the twins. She'd had what's called a partial abruption. It's when the placenta begins tearing away from the uterine wall. We put her on bed rest for a month, hoping we could stop it. But due to no fault of her own, it worsened. She was a walking time bomb. I tried to reason with her, telling her that when it ruptured completely, it would kill the twins and her. Her doctor and I wanted to take the twins. She stared at us like we'd lost our minds and said, "Where are you taking them?" I wanted Rachel. And if it meant the kids had to go to keep her, then the kids had to go. Send them to God. She and I, we could make more. I wanted us to grow old, laugh at our wrinkles. She wanted that too. But the problem was that there was a chance, a very slim chance, that if we did nothing, the kids would make it. That they'd all be fine. She might have had better chances at a roulette table. But because it existed, she took a chance on the twins. I said, "Give them to God. Let Him sort it out." She just shook her head. "This is the chance we took." I got angry,
questioned her love, screamed, yelled, even threw stuff around the house. But she'd made up her mind. One of the very things I loved the most about her was now the very thing I was fighting. I shouted, "How could God mind? How could he ever blame you? Surely he would understand." She wouldn't hear it. She just patted her stomach and said, "Ben, I love you, but I'm not living the rest of my life looking at Michael and Hannah on the back of my eyelids, knowing they might have made it, knowing there was a chance, and I didn't take it." So I tied on my shoes, ran out the door, a midnight run on the beach to clear my head. When my cell phone rang, I sent it to voicemail. I can't tell you the number of times I shifted, running my fingertips along the lettering of Michael's name, then Hannah's. As best I can piece together, moments after I left, she ruptured. She managed to dial 911, but they were too late. Not that they could have done anything. 2 hours later, I returned, flashing lights, police in my kitchen, talking into radios, the phone ringing. A call from the hospital. Strange people stood in my kitchen. They drove me to the morgue, asked me to identify her. In trying to save Rachel, they had performed an emergency C-section delivering the kids. They had laid them out next to her, kind of tucked them up alongside her. The voicemail you heard on the plane is the one she'd left me, just before everything went bad. I've saved it and resaved it so I could send it to myself, most every day, to remind me that despite myself, she loved me. I looked at Ashley. Tears were streaming down her face. "You asked once, what can't be forgiven?" I nodded. "It's words. Words you can't take back because the person you spoke them to took them to her grave 4.5 years ago." I looked around, waving my hand across the marble sarcophagus. The simple tombstone didn't seem right, so I built them this, laid them side by side. I put the solarium up there so she can see the orchids, and at night the stars. I knew she'd like that. I even had the tree limbs trimmed to let the light through. Sometimes you can see the Big Dipper, sometimes the moon. Many nights I've come here, leaning against her, my fingertips resting on the twins, tracing their names, and listen to myself tell her our story. I shook my head and pointed at the recorders. "I've told it many times, but the end is always the same." Ashley's lip was trembling. She held my hand between both of hers. Her tears had dripped onto the marble, alongside 10,000 of mine.
"You should have told me. Why didn't you tell me?"
So many times I wanted to stop dragging that sled, turn around and spill it, tell you everything, but you have so much in front of you, so much to look forward to.
"You should have. You owe me that."
"I do now. I didn't then." She placed her hand flat across my chest, then wrapped her arms around my neck and buried her face alongside mine. She placed both palms on my face and shook her head.
"Ben."
No answer.
"Ben."
I opened my mouth, my eyes on Rachel, and pushed out the words. A whisper.
"I'm so sorry."
She smiled, shook her head.
"She forgave you the moment you said it."
Forgiveness is a tough thing, both in the offering and the accepting. We sat there a long time. Through the glass above, I watched a formation of pelicans fly over,
and one osprey.
Out beyond the breakers, bottlenose dolphins were feeding south, rolling in groups of six and eight.
Ashley tried to speak, tried again and still could not find the words. Finally, she wiped her eyes, pressed her ear to my chest and whispered,
"Give me all the pieces."
"There are a lot of them, and I'm not sure they'll ever go back together again." She kissed me.
"Let me try."
"You would be better off to leave me," and she half-smiled.
"I'm not leaving you. Not going it alone."
She shook her head. "Not looking at the memory of you every time I close my eyes." Something deep inside me needed to hear that, needed to know I was worth that, that despite myself, love might snatch me back, lift me from the fire. We sat for several hours, staring out across the ocean. Finally, I stood and kissed the stone above Rachel's face. The twins, too. There were no tears this time. It wasn't goodbye, only a pause. Just waving my hand through the mist, the smoke as it disappeared. We walked out, locked the door, and wound through the dunes. I held her naked left hand in mine. She stopped me, a wrinkle between her eyes. She wiped her nose on her sleeve. "I gave Vince back his ring. Told him that I liked him very much, but..." She shook her head. "I think he was relieved to know the truth." We stood atop the last dune, staring out over the beach. South, to our right, one of the nests had hatched. Hundreds of tiny tracks led to the water. The waves and foam were filling them, erasing them. Far out, beyond the breakers and waves, shiny black circles of onyx floated atop the water's surface, glittering black diamonds. I placed her hand flat across mine. "Start slow. It's been a long time since I've run with anyone. Not sure how my legs will respond." She kissed me. Her lips were warm, wet, and trembling. I pointed. "Which way?" She shook her head, smiling, the sun lighting her eyes.
"Don't care. You're a real runner, and I'm not, so I don't know if I can keep up with you.
How fast? How far?" "LSD.
"What?"
"Long, slow distance, where miles don't matter, only time. And in reverse, the slower, the better."
She wrapped her arms around me, pressed her chest to mine, and laughed.
"Okay, but we better route through Atlanta."
"Atlanta?" She nodded a sly smile. "You need to talk with my dad."
"I do."
"Yep. Aren't you a little old for that? Remember, I'm a Southern girl, and my daddy's only daughter."
"How's he get along with doctors?"
A laugh.
"Poorly."
"Poorly?"
She nodded.
"What's he do?"
"Plaintiff's attorney."
"You've got to be kidding."
"Don't worry, he likes you."
"How do you know?"
"He read the story."
"What story?"
"The one I wrote that hit shelves." She stared at her watch.
"This week?"
"Where?"
A shrug.
"All over."
"Define all over."
She rolled her eyes.
"All over." "What's it about?"
"A trip I took recently."
"Am I in it?"
"Yep."
She took off, running, her laughter echoing.
"We both are."
Her arms swung side to side, causing too much lateral movement, and her stride was too short by maybe 3 inches. and she put too much weight on her toes, she overpronated, and she favored her left leg, and... But she was a quick study. We could fix all that. And it wouldn't take long. Broken people just need piecing back together. For so long I'd carried the pieces of me. Every now and then I'd drop one like a breadcrumb, so I could find my way home. Then Ashley came along and gathered the pieces, and somewhere between 11,000 feet and sea level, the picture began taking shape. Dim at first, then clearer. Not yet clear, but these things take time. Maybe each of us was once a complete whole, a clear picture, a single piece. Then something happened to crack and shatter us, leaving us disconnected, torn and splintered. Some of us lie in 100 pieces, some 10,000. Some are edged with sharp contrast, some dim shades of gray. Some find they are missing pieces. Some find they have too many. In any case, we are left shaking our heads. It can't be done. Then someone comes along who mends a tattered edge or returns a lost piece. The process is tedious, painful, and there are no shortcuts. Anything that promises to be one is not. But somehow, as we walk away from the crash site, away from the wreckage, whole sections start taking shape. Something vague we see out of the corner of our eye. For a second, we stop shaking our heads. We wonder. Maybe. Just maybe. It's risky for both of us. You must hope in an image you can't see, and I must trust you. With me. That's the piecing. Ashley ran up the beach, the sun spilling down her back, fresh footprints in the sand, sweat shining on her thighs, condensation on her calves. I could see them both, Rachel in the dunes, Ashley on the beach. I shook my head. I can't make sense of that. I don't know how. I scratched my head. Ashley returned, breathing heavy, laughing, smiling. She raised her eyebrows, pulled on my hand. Ben Payne? More tears I could not explain. I did not try. Yes? When you laugh, I want to smile. And when you cry... She brushed the tears off my face. I want the tears to roll down my cheeks. She shook her head once, whispering, I'm not leaving you. Won't. I swallowed. How then does one live? A memory echoed from beyond the dunes. Put one foot in front of the other. Maybe piecing is continual. Maybe the glue takes time to dry. Maybe bones take time to mend. Maybe it's okay that the mess I call me is in process. Maybe it's a long, hard walk out of the crash site. Maybe the distance is different for each of us. Maybe love is bigger than my mess. My voice was slow in coming. Can we walk a bit first? She nodded, and we did. First a mile, then two. A gentle breeze in our faces. We reached the lifeguard chair and turned around. She tugged on me, the breeze now at our backs. Come on. You ready? So we picked up a jog. I was weak, using muscles I'd forgotten. Wasn't long, and we were running. And we ran a long time. Somewhere in the miles that followed, sweat flinging off my fingertips, salt stinging my eyes, my breath deep, rhythmic and clean, my feet barely touching the ground. I looked down and found the pieces of me melting
into one. This is George Newbern. We hope you've enjoyed this unabridged production of The Mountain Between Us by Charles Martin. This program was directed by Chris Koscheski. Executive producers Aaron Blank and Dan Musselman. Text copyright 2010 by Charles Martin. Production copyright 2010. Random House, Inc. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.